And now, now, in conversation with the boyhood heroes who became his broadcasting colleagues, this is My Radio 1. With Sean
Tilley. From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1. Sean
Tilley. My Radio 1. Richard
Skinner. Hello, this is Richard Skinner with Britain's Top 40, the complete countdown of the best-selling singles in the United Kingdom, as compiled by Gallup for Radio 1 and you. The best sound in Britain. Radio 1. Here's Howard Jones at number 40.
Hi, Sean. It's good to be with you today on My Radio 1.
So 1973 it was. I'm going to take you all the way back here, Richard. Radio 1 decide that they want to create a daily news program, but they need some people to present it. So that resulted in you making the gigantic leap to the network, but it was all really by chance, wasn't it?
I was working at Radio Solent, the BBC local station on the South Coast, and a little to my knowledge, two future Newsbeat producers were cruising the entire country trying to find people who'd be suitable to broadcast on Newsbeat. And they happened to catch me on a shift in which I read the news and then presented an hour-long pop show of new releases.
This is BBC Radio Solent, broadcasting on 300 and 221 metres medium wave and 96.1 VHF.
And they literally, they turned the car round in Winchester and came back to Southampton. This is astounding, really. What a luck. Came into the building as I finished my show and said, would you like to audition for Radio 1's new news programme? And, you know, I took a millisecond and said yes. So on the train up to Waterloo, teeth chattering, I remember being so nervous, went in, did a short audition, which was awful, but they somehow accepted that it had potential. And I was part of the launch team. We got together probably 6 weeks, 5 to 6 weeks before the start of the show, in the extension of Broadcasting House overlooking the back Cavendish Street. It was we felt very much our own little crew, and slowly that crew was assembled, and we tried to create a different sort of radio news.
Newsbeat. Newsbeat. Radio 1.
And on the Tea Time Newsbeat, we'll be meeting the young wife who's been named as Britain's champion booty maker. As the underwater experts report on what went wrong for Pisces 3, we ask, how safe is it for our divers?
I guess for the first time in 6 years, Radio 1 had some competition on the horizon. It was looming, and it required by the management some strategic thinking.
Commercial radio was starting in the October, and that was going to be LBC and Capital Radio. Now, LBC was all news. Capital Radio had a fully equipped and staffed newsroom and were putting out proper news bulletins and a full news roundup at the end of the day. And they didn't want to get caught, Radio 1, with their pants down. They did not want the MPs to say, BBC, public money, or not providing the... And so they decided that they'd give it a go. So the job was given to the Current Affairs magazine programme department of the BBC. So we weren't technically news. We were not news. We were a Current Affairs magazine programme, which meant silly things, like we weren't allowed to read the news headlines ourselves. The Radio 2 newsreader had to come in and read the news headlines, and we could only read the intros to the packages, the interviews.
And first, the latest headlines.
At home, most domestic airfares are to go up by as much as 7.5% in November. Building firms say too much form filling and delays in getting payment from local authorities are forcing some of them out of business.
The Japanese terrorists have released four more hostages at Dhaka in Bangladesh. They've been holding the other passengers and crew of a Japan Airlines DC-8 there for more than 3 days now.
We join Rocking Richard Skinner in our studios for Newsbeat.
Thanks a lot, reactivated Roscoe. And it's deadlock in election 74, with Harold Wilson just a whisker in front and only a handful of results to come. But Labour say they're ready to have a go at running the country. And as we get into the last newsbeat of this remarkable day, Mr. Wilson's Labour Party has the narrowest of leads over the Tories. Just 5 seats. There are 10 more results to come, so Election 74 has produced a deadlock. The two giant parties are neck and neck, with an assorted bag of 30 Liberals, Nationalists and Ulster members holding them to possible ransom. It's a position unknown in recent years, and as the Labour and Conservative leaders are keeping absolutely silent about their plans, we can only guess what we're in for.
In the situation the country is facing, it is of paramount importance that a government be quickly formed to get the country back to full-time work in order to be able to deal with the pressing economic problems which face us both at home and abroad.
There aren't many clips of Newsbeat left in existence from the early days, but listening back to that, in 1974, already the sort of energy and urgency of the programme is there, and it really hit the ground running.
We were proud of it. The DJs on Radio 1 hated it. Because it stole 15 minutes of their show, and particularly Johnny Walker, who came on at 12 and half an hour later had to hand over to us. And he was an unhappy bunny. He was not pleased. Didn't like it at all.
Johnny Walker Show for Friday the 2nd of July, back with more music and memories in a quarter of an hour. But now at 12:30, time for Newsbeat.
At one point, we actually had to hand over to Johnny Walker 8 minutes early because we ran out of items. It only happened once. We ran out of items. And the only hint was that the theme tune to the show started rolling in, and I had said, "Are you there, Johnny? Johnny, are you there?" And it was, "Yes." He said, "Well, that's it. We'll be back at 5:30." The great thing is, as the years went by, and obviously as major news stories broke, Newsbeat got the respect it was due, and I think certainly within 2 or 3 years was an accepted authoritative news source, and Radio 1 was happy that it was there after all.
Radio 1 is big news.
Stand by for Richard Skinner.
The greatest!
With Newsbeat.
Thank you, Paul. And today, should people who've been forced to kill get away with murder? And the inside story of the most beautiful bodyguards in the world.
Newsbeat! Newsbeat!
During my time on Newsbeat, the main job I had, beyond presenting, and you have to do serious news as well, my main job was being the music editor, the entertainment editor of the show. And that means that for 2 shows a day, 5 days a week, for 7 years, I interviewed pop stars. And that's a hell of a lot of interviews. I think, frankly, it would be easier to name the pop stars I didn't interview rather than the ones I did.
The latest album from Queen, it's a live double, including stage performances of songs like Bohemian Rhapsody. And it's their first live album. And drummer Roger Taylor has been telling Richard Skinner about it.
We recorded the live album, actually, in Europe. We did a very long tour of Europe earlier this year. And we just recorded every night. We took along a mobile track. And at the end, we listened to cassettes of every night and went to Switzerland and mixed it. I think one of the things we tried to do with the live album, we did try to make it a genuine live album with a concert atmosphere. I don't think there's really any other way of doing it.
There's plenty of audience involved there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's tons of audience on it because it's real.
I must admit, listening to it, it does sound like a live LP. It has the drawbacks of a live LP.
Yeah.
It does have the excitement there.
Yeah, I mean, no live album is going to be as high fidelity as a studio album. I mean, there's just no way.
I think it would be fair to say that your name was becoming very familiar to Radio 1 listeners, because they would hear Richard Skinner being introduced on Newsbeat a couple of times a day. But how did you make that move from a news bod to a DJ on the network?
Doreen Davis was that woman who you sent demos to, and I sent a demo. I made it at my own expense in a studio down the road called Aerodel, and I think I was trying to be Tony Blackburn. You know, it was, I've got them and they're awful, and you know, she was right to turn me down. But every year I tried again, and every year I tried again, and then of all things, Radio 2 asked me to demo for an early morning show, the show that preceded the breakfast show on Radio 1. And I thought, no, I don't want to do this. But it gave me hands-on in the studio. The studio was the same as Radio 1. Anyway, and I eventually developed my own style. And after 7 years, they were beginning to use me a bit more. They were letting me do long-form interviews in magazine programs. I was getting out of the Newsbeat, you're a newsman thing. And then one night on a Friday, I was in a pub called The Crown and Scepter, just around the corner from Broadcasting House. And a guy called Tony Wilson, who's not the factory Tony Wilson, Tony produced the Friday Rock rock show on Radio 1, came running in. This was about 8.30, and the show was on at 10. And he looked around wildly, ran over to me and said, "Are you doing anything tonight?" And I went, "No." And he said, "Tommy Vance is stuck in Gibraltar. He went out to do a BFBS, for a Forces Broadcasting Programme. Flights have been cancelled. He can't get back. You're doing the Friday rock show."
On 275 and 285 medium wave and stereo VHF, it's the Friday Rock Show. Good evening, this is Richard Skinner sitting in for Tommy Vance, who's literally in the air right now, stranded on a plane over Europe. Despite Tommy's absence, there's some great music on tonight's programme. We've got vintage sessions from Genesis, plus records from Kiss, Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Pink Floyd, Nick Lowe, Joni Mitchell, Hot Tuna and Queen. Add to that the Friday Night Connection results and this week's new competition, and it sounds like a great 2 hours here on Radio 1. Let's kick things off with Led Zeppelin.
And he literally grabbed me, ran me back to the Radio 1 studio, which luckily I knew how to operate because I'd done a Radio 2 demo, and I did the Friday Rock Show with an hour's notice.
And there it goes. Bow, wow, wow. My record of the week. Last play as a record of the week. C30, C60, C90, go. That's got to be a hit record. I'm afraid it's burning up to be a really nasty evening on the roads. Here's a message now for travellers on the M1 in Leicestershire.
Traffic news from Radio 1.
And within a month, they asked me to dep for 2 months for Peter Powell on the Tea Time Show. So I was suddenly saying, and now over to Newsbeat, which was a bit of a change.
Thank you, Peter. And many thanks to Andy, too, for the past 2.5 hours of music. Welcome along to the dynamic, super-concentrated 60-minute Friday edition of the Richard Skinner Show from Radio 1. And from the LP Rumours to kick off the show, this is Fleetwood Mac. We've all been shocked this week by the news of John Lennon's death in New York, and I think the best thing we can do is to remember him as he was at his best when he was performing. He's been a great influence on music right the way through the 60s, was back again now, and tonight in Top of the Pops, as a tribute to him, let's go back to see him in concert, filmed about 5 years ago in New York, singing Imagine.
Now that's very interesting listening to that, because obviously once you did become a DJ on Radio 1, things progressed very quickly. You joined the roster of regular Top of the Pops presenters, and only about 3 or 4 shows in, you were doing that tribute to John Lennon. And more than that, it was actually you that rang up Paul McCartney and broke the news to him.
I had the sad honour of telling the McCartney household that John Lennon was dead. We got on very well. We just forget he's a Beatle. I was very nervous initially with him, but he set me easily at rest, and we became sort of as much friends as you could be in that situation. So I had his number, and so I sat there, and I thought, what do I do? So I rang it, and the phone rang, and it rang, and it rang, and eventually the phone was picked up, and a voice that wasn't Paul McCartney, a man's voice, said, yeah, and I said who I was, you know, Richard Skinner here, I've got some really bad news. Are you aware that John Lennon has been shot dead? And there was a massive pause at the other end, and whoever it was, the guy said, are you sure? And I said, absolutely, this is confirmed. Is there any way, and I appreciate how awful it is, that I could get something from Paul on this, you know, at some point? And the guy said, right, we'll tell him, we'll come back to you.
There's been reaction on both sides of the Atlantic to the murder earlier this morning of the former Beatle John Lennon. He was shot dead outside his home in New York.
We never did do an interview, but he actually had the decency to phone back and thank you for calling. You were the first person to tell me, but I'm not prepared. I cannot, in these circumstances, broadcast, he said. But, you know, it's an appalling thing and you understand. And I said, yes, and if you can talk at some point, we must.
Richard Skinner, up with us tonight.
Right at the beginning of 1981, Mike Read moves to Breakfast, and you take over the evening show between 8 and 10 that he'd been occupying for a couple of years, directly before John Peel. That must have been wonderful.
It was great. There was real competition between me and John Peel. You know, there's two sides to John. John is a lovely, was a lovely, lovely man, but he didn't like anyone treading on his toes. He did not like anyone maybe getting bands that he wanted to do sessions for them. We had some big rows about who I want, you know, could I have them as a session? Did he have them as a session? He once threatened a band that if they did a session for me, he would never play their record again. So I'm still saying he's a lovely guy, but he was very competitive indeed. It was fascinating. It was a great period to be doing it, you know, 81, 2, you know, because that's when all the kind of new wave stuff came through with the Duran Durans and Tainted Love and Spandau Ballet, which at the time was very hip, you know, bands like Scritti Politti. So it was a great time to be on that show.
Radio 1 Roundtable.
Our pal Kid Jansen returned to Radio 1 after a pretty major television stint in America. He takes over the evening show from you, but if anything, you become even busier on the network after that.
In the mid-80s at Radio 1, I was doing Roundtable on a Friday night. Still a great idea. It runs today.
Just gone 5:45 and Richard Skinner's at the Roundtable.
Ian, you stole my line exactly.
Radio 1 Roundtable.
On the round table, it's welcome for the first time to Annabelle Lamb. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I think we've got an interesting selection of records for you, Annabelle. Also, welcome back to Mark Armand.
Hello.
Hello, Mark. And on the 16th anniversary of Radio 1, the nation's first, or it's his first broadcast on the national network, Mark Page.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Then I was doing a Saturday afternoon magazine show called Saturday Live.
Saturday Live on Radio 1.
Yeah, you're welcome along to Saturday Live with Muriel Gray and me, Richard Skinner, the show that always goes with a...
On this show today, Clive James talks about his first novel, Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers are delighting us with some live music, and we have a look at or listen to one of the most bizarre exhibitions around.
Also, I'll be taking to the air with a flock of seagulls, catching up with the hot country sounds of Jason and the Scorchers, and as their British tour reaches its climax, I'll be meeting up with the Waterboys.
And we'll also be talking to the extremely wonderful Sade, but first, here's Rubber Rodeo, Anywhere With You.
And I was also doing the Top 40 on Sunday afternoons, which I did for 2 years.
The new Top 40 with Richard Skinner.
Taking over Radio 1's flagship, long-established Sunday evening chart show, that must have been a real thrill.
Obviously, to be given the chance of hosting the Top 40 was an absolute honour because, well, you know, it was the biggest show on the radio back then. And, you know, I'd been listening to it since I was a kid. I used to listen to Alan Freeman on Pick of the Pops and the Solid Gold 60 and then, you know, all the other Top 40 presenters leading up to me, you know, Simon and Tommy and the others. And then suddenly, to find yourself in that studio doing the show absolutely live with the Chartbusters Hour First as well, which were the Bubbling Under songs, it was just special. And you were aware that this was the most listened to show. It just, you know, it just had that frissance of energy and excitement that made it a very special show. It was, as the jingle said, the chart that counts, and it worked.
Radio 1's Top 40.
Now, Gallup's computers were working overtime last night because one particular record, whose proceeds all go to famine relief in Ethiopia, has been selling at unprecedented levels. Do You Know It's Christmas by Band Aid has, in the 6 days up to 6 o'clock last night, become the fastest selling record in history.
Listening back to that, I mean, thinking about it, you're only a few months into your reign on the Top 40, but already you've probably arrived at the highlight.
Announcing Band Aid as the number one song that Christmas was very special because I'd actually been integral in the announcing of the entire Band Aid operation. Bob Geldof came on my Saturday afternoon show to plug his latest album, but he had just seen that report on TV of the Ethiopian famine, and
it was just dominating his mind at the time. So out the window went the interview about his album, and he announced that the following day he was calling his friends in and that they were going to record a song to aid the kids and the starving in Ethiopia. And, well, as I say, the rest became very, very important history.
The Power of Love at number 5 for Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Up one place to number 4, Like a Virgin, Madonna. Up one place to 3, We All Stand Together, Paul McCartney and the Frog Chorus. Steady at 2, It's Last Christmas from Wham. And still at the top, Band-Aid.
On the 13th of July, 1985, I was in the football commentary gantry at Wembley Stadium, and it was about 10 to 12 noon. We were preparing for Live Aid. It was this... we didn't know what it was, really. It was going to be a big charity show, and we'd managed to con everyone around the world to put it out live on television and loads of radio as well, including Radio 1, of course. I was part of the TV team, so because basically it was the whistle test from BBC Two. That was the team that did the TV coverage. So I was up there, and about 4 minutes or 5 minutes to go, they suddenly realised that the Prince and Princess of Wales, who were meant to be arriving at 12, were late. They were caught in the traffic. So we had to change the opening. And so we had to come up with something to say at 12 o'clock. And my producer, Trevor Dan, and I sat down, and he thought of an old intro for a programme called Two-Way Family Favourites, where they used to say, it's 12 noon in London, 1 p.m. in Munich, and time for Family Favourites. Because it was favourites requests between the forces in Germany and Britain. And he adapted this into, it's 12 noon in London, 7 a.m. in Philadelphia, and all that sort of stuff. And that was going to be the opening announcement of Live Aid, and I was going to announce it, which I hadn't known I was going to do until that minute. So we rehearsed it a couple of times. 12 o'clock, the pips went. I started the announcement. They hadn't told me. They were putting it over the speakers at Wembley Stadium. Now, there's this mild delay, you know, because you say it, and then your voice comes back. And I nearly, completely messed it up, I nearly said the famine in America.
It's 12 noon in London, 7 a.m. in Philadelphia. And around the world, it's time for Live Aid. 16 hours of live music in aid of famine relief in Africa. Wembley welcomes their Royal Highnesses, the Prince and Princess of Wales.
But I managed to get through it. You wouldn't know that there was nearly a slip in there, and that was the beginning. Yeah, it was the biggest audience at that time for anything ever in the world. It even beat the Pope's Urbi et Orbi at Christmas. No one had broadcast to a bigger audience, even more than Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. I don't know what's happened since, but I did hang on to that for a long time. It was a hell of a day. What a day. And when you realised, I did a shift, and then I went to TV Centre for a while, and just driving through London, hot day, car windows open, houses windows, everywhere you went, you could hear Live Aid coming out of houses. It was everywhere. And I think it worked so well because nobody knew what to expect. And so it happened. And it was unparalleled in my experience.
Live Aid from London with BBC TV and Radio 1.
We're back in Wembley Stadium in London now, waiting for our next live performance from Brian Ferry. And I must welcome a couple of guests here. First of all, a man who was on for a very short time, actually, Adam Ant. Did you enjoy the very short appearance he made on the
Yeah, it was great. If it had been 10 seconds, I would have been there. Yeah. I would have introduced somebody, give away ice cream cards.
When did you first hear that you were going to be on the bill, or when were you approached?
Right back quite a while ago, as much as, I think, 3 months ago.
Only a year or so after the career high of Live Aid, you decide to leave Radio 1 in 1986. What was the thinking behind that?
Johnny Beerling had asked me to demo up a sort of MOR, AOR rock show type thing, perhaps, because they had ambition to go after midnight. And so I went into the pit, which is our kind of production studio, and played Steely Dan and the sort of acts that didn't get played on regular Radio 1, supposedly sophisticated, And somehow Capital Radio got wind of this, don't know who told them, and their programme director rang me up and said, we don't want to do that at midnight. We're going to do a whole new station dedicated to that sort of music. We're going to call it CFM and split Capital Radio on medium wave and CFM on 95.8 FM. And so they asked me if I'd be the lead presenter, myself, and Nicky Horn was the other presenter who was going to go on there, and Roger Scott. And so they also offered me 3 times the money. And so I went to Capital for a couple of years and did the shows. and it was mildly successful. But you see, people listened on AM in those days, so medium wave. FM was not the regular listening point for anyone.
And next week at this time on the all-new CFM, it'll be Nicky Horn. He'll have 3 hours of classic rock, 12 till 3, and you'll find me on 95.8 between 3 and 5 with a new show, including the nation's first CD chart rundown. So that's me, Richard Skinner, CFM between 3 and 5 from next Sunday.
And then Richard Park came in as controller of Capital, and he turned it on its head and put ordinary Capital on FM and created a gold station for the medium wave outlet. And I was presented with the option of going to the gold station, where I'd be playing 1963 songs by the Beatles and the Hollies, and I wasn't keen on that at all. So I got in touch with Radio 1 and said, you know that idea you had about a late night show, you know, is it going to happen? And then the fact is, yes, it was, because they were then getting their FM transmitter. So we're talking here, I think, 87, maybe, 88. And so they offered me. I did the show that was midnight till 2 a.m.
This is something you'll know, although you won't know this version. Robert Cray and his band have covered this song. This is the original recording of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark from Philip Walker.
And the midnight till 2 a.m. show was just as we had demoed it up. It was people like Sade and Sophisticated, but I'd play blues, and it was entirely self-produced. I could choose all the records, anything I wanted. I never realised how lucky I was. You know, anything I wanted I could play, including even songs like Working Class Hero by John Lennon, which famously has a swear word that you're not allowed to say on the air, but I was given dispensation. And that was terrific to do that shift, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I did that until I went on holiday one year and Bob Harris sat in for me, and then when I came back they gave the show to Bob Harris. So the moral is, never go on holiday.
Now, if you listen to my late night show next Monday night at midnight, that's sort of Monday into Tuesday, really. You're in for a real treat, because in session I have this man, Brian Kennedy.
Right, so there you are, back safely in the fold at Radio 1, late 1980s, and little did you know, you'd end up working on the network alongside somebody who you massively admired, but you first met him elsewhere.
When I moved to Capital Radio in the mid-80s, I met someone who I admired from afar from the 70s onwards, and that was Roger Scott. When Capital started, he was the standout star presenter for me. He had that sort of American air without a mid-Atlantic accent. He was distinctly British, but you could tell he'd worked in American radio. He never talked too much. It wasn't all about him. It was about the music. He had a great sense of humour. He knew the music inside out. And I think by far, at that point, he was probably the best radio presenter in Britain. Ironically, he'd auditioned for Radio 1 under the name Bob Baker, and didn't get the job. He was doing United Biscuits Network, which was a biscuit factory west of London. And then he got the job on Capital.
A very, very fast thank you to everybody I've worked with over the past 15 years at Capital. It has been a pleasure. You've been terrific, and it has been great. Capital Gold continues 2 days a week, next weekend, starting at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning with Tony Blackburn. We wish everybody the best of luck. I can't send you a change of address card, but it'll be just 9 megahertz of way in stereo. Bye.
Incidentally, both he, myself and Nicky Campbell all at the same time put our feelers out towards Radio 1, and all three of us at virtually the same time moved back, for me, moved back, and they moved over to join Radio 1 about the time that the FM transmitters were introduced for Radio 1, which gave it more airtime and more ability to spread its wings musically.
We'll be visiting New Jersey with Bon Jovi and rummaging through the tape archives at Abbey Road with the author of a new book called The Complete Beatles Recording Sessions. You'll hear some of the records climbing the American charts this week, and our In Concert at 6:30 features Tanita Tikaram and Brendan Croker, plus masses of the best music you'll hear all week. Now remember, you can hear Radio 1 in stereo this afternoon across the UK between 88 and 91 megahertz FM. So retune if you're not there already. That's FM stereo between 88 and 91 megahertz.
And Roger came over to Radio 1 to present initially the Saturday afternoon slot, which they called the Saturday Sequence, which was a hell of a long show. He was on from lunchtime till past tea time. It was about 7 hours. And he held it together. I mean, it was basically a mixture of playing records and documentaries and live sessions. And it's not an easy show to do, because when he died, I took it over. And it's a long schlep on air. But he did it, and just he had an ease and command of the air that I think there are good, great presenters, but there aren't many as good as he was. He was a very private man. You wouldn't go down the pub and have a laugh with him, but you could have great conversations. And he'd been everywhere, you know. I mean, he'd been with John and Yoko when they were in their bed-in in Toronto. He'd interviewed them. And if you see any film of it, Roger Scott's there. You can see him. And he'd interviewed, you know, he and I used to have competitions as to who we'd interviewed. And damn it, he'd always interviewed one more than me. You know, he'd interviewed John Lennon in the 60s. What? You know, and I think that that's why he was the perfect presenter for the classic albums series, because, you know, he knew his stuff. He really knew his stuff. And although the producer of that series, John Pidgeon, actually did the interviews for the show and indeed wrote a script for the show, I don't believe that Roger would have not been writing his own script or amending it, adding his own stuff. He was not one to just narrate. He would have put his own stamp into those shows. Action! Radio!
Radio 1! Sometimes there's a moment in a recording career when everything comes together in the studio and standards are set which are not achieved again. Subsequent albums inevitably fall short. That wasn't the case with the album we're about to reappraise right now, because the band did not record again. The year is 1983, and our classic album is the fifth and last by The Police, Synchronicity.
Roger was a very decent man, and in the latter part of his life, when he was very, very ill, he soldiered on beyond the point that, you know, you would think you couldn't broadcast, and he did. And when he couldn't come in, they took the microphone to him, and he was recording the links for his shows, you know, basically on his deathbed.
That's it. It's coming up to 2 o'clock. Thank you for your company. Thank you for your support, and thank you for your kindness. And thank you to Phil Swern for the hard work he puts in on this show every weekend. I hope I'll see you next weekend, but there are no guarantees. Have yourselves a good week. Jackie Brambles will be here with the early show at 5 a.m. Bye-bye.
It eventually became too much for him, and the day before he died, actually, he phoned me, and it was a very emotional and difficult phone call, and he wished me luck with the show, because I was going to sit in for him the following week, and he handed it over to me and said, you know, be good, and I know you'll look after these shows, and I kind of said, no, you'll be back, but he wasn't, and sadly the next day he was gone.
Radio 1 Saturday sequence. 2 weeks today, we'll be enjoying an acoustic session from the House of Love. So to get us in the mood for the whole of 2 weeks, here they are from their new album, singing about the Beatles and the Stones.
Do you know something? It's not only fantastic hearing you talking about your own mighty contribution to Radio 1, but also a fitting tribute to Roger Scott too. Richard Skinner, how wonderful to finally include you on my Radio 1.
Sean, thank you very much.